You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are talking
while married.
Well, I'm not having coffee tonight. I'm having a little bit of OJ. And because I need the extra energy, because some of the things I want to talk about this evening, first off, in our coffee OJ conversation, is going to be what the heck is going on with these executive orders with regards to immigration. No surprise to me, but a huge surprise to some of the people in the United States of America.
Well, it shouldn't be any surprise, Ron. I mean, if Biden's doing just what he said he was going to do. And what you see now is people piling along the border in Juarez and getting ready to try to get over the border. I mean, what did people expect?
No, surprise is probably the wrong word to use. A pisser is probably the better word to use. You know, I'm looking at Tijuana. And of course, we know, having come from California at the San Diego border, is that they've been piled up. Stockpiled, I think is a great word to use, in Tijuana for months, ever since Biden became a viable candidate and had started talking about how he was going to stop the building on the wall and increase the amount of immigrants being allowed into the United States and finding a pathway to citizenship for what he refers to as 11 million undocumented aliens in the United States. And I tell you, we are going to find out that the number of undocumented aliens in this country is closer to twice as much as 11 million.
At least twice as much. And, you know, with all of these executive orders, I have one question that keeps ringing in my mind to the American people. Is this what you really wanted? Is this what you voted for? Do you see, do you look at the news and do you see the people that are coming up over? Look at the people themselves. They're not, these are not doctors and lawyers. These are unskilled immigrants that don't speak English that are going to be piling into our country. And Biden still has three executive orders that he's going to sign right away regards to immigration.
No, that's exactly right. And you know what? And these are not the creme de la creme of people coming into our country internationally. And that this is not a xenophobic statement. It is a forensic fact. We have people that come into the United States from all over the world that have job skills, that can speak our language, and that are properly vetted and go through the standard immigration process in the legal way. This is not what we're getting. At a time where the United States of America needs to be extremely competitive with China, who may become the first or the number one nation in the world economically, taking over the number one spot from the United States of America, this is the time where we need to have technological advances and people that have the job skills to keep America ahead of a communist regime, and we don't have it. One more thing I want to add, real quick. They are not medically vetted. These are people that are coming from countries filled with COVID, and now they're, you know, stockpiled at the border, waiting to jump over, and we don't have any idea of what the transmission capabilities of these people are, not only with COVID, but with other diseases and things like that, of which once they become hospitalized, we will assume. And that is going to be a huge drain of our resources, our economic resources.
Well, not to mention, if you look at a map, a COVID map of where COVID is in the country, just look at the border areas with Mexico, and they are filled with COVID. Why? Because people are coming up over the border unvetted. And, you know, people in the rest of the country, they don't think about that because they're not in that same position. Don't forget these people don't stick around in Texas, Arizona, and California all the time. They go to all different areas of the country. So, you know, people are going to be affected as well. I want to mention the three new executive orders that Biden is doing regards the border. And the first one is he's creating a task force to push forward with the reunification of migrants who were separated from family members at the border during the Trump administration. So people come up to the border with children, whether they're their children or not their children, because they figured that that was an easy way, and it has been in the past under the Obama-Biden administration, to get yourself into the country. And so President Trump put a stop to that and said, no, you can't do that. The adults have to stay in Mexico. So,
or whatever country they're coming
from. So now Biden wants to bring all those families up here and reunify them with the children that are in the United States, which is totally ridiculous. In my opinion, you send the children back rather than bring the people up.
Well, let me say this for a second. You know, what parent would just give their child up across the border to the United States? What parent would do that? You know, I'm just not that parent. Okay.
No, and that's really not the kind of parent that I think that I would want to be in the United States. So this task force is supposed to make recommendations, and they're supposed to work to find those people that were separated. Good luck with that. And make recommendations regarding steps that can be taken. Another order is going to implement a three-part strategy to address irregular migration at the southern border. And it's supposed to develop a strategy to tackle the instability and other factors that drive migrants north from other countries. So they're going to be looking at the political climates in Honduras and Guatemala and Mexico and El Salvador and the places that migrants come up from. And, you know, I'm not sure so much that's our purview to worry about, although I understand that if we help and we can get those countries stabilized, then people won't be coming up. But I don't know. I mean, it would take a tremendous, we cannot be parents to all these other countries. We just don't have the resources to do that.
You know, the one thing that I appreciated about President Trump when he was here is that he kept America first. That was the big deal. All right. We give hundreds of billions of dollars a year to all of these different countries throughout the world. And we have problems with economic inequity in this country. We have poor people in this country. We have children in need. We have veterans in need. We have senior citizens in need. We have businesses that have fallen, especially during this COVID epidemic. Over 10,000 businesses, I think restaurants alone, over 10,000 restaurants alone have failed. We have a crumbling infrastructure, roadways, bridges, I mean, you name it. We have a lot of needs in this country, and we can't stay on top as the number one democratic nation in the world if we are doing what we're doing right now. Okay, we were trying to move away from this absolute idiocy of giving everything to everybody, including our enemies. Even while Trump was president, he was trying to cut that down. And here we come with the whole Biden, Obama, Harris, Susan Rice administration, and we're back in the toilet again.
Well, we are. And you know what you're saying about that we can't support all these poor people around the world. Well, guess what? We're just letting them into our country, and we're going to support them anyway. So this makes no sense. The most controversial order that Biden has just signed is the migrant protection, regarding the migrant protection protocols that Trump set up, the MPP, where the Remain in Mexico policy was developed by President Trump. So now President Biden is going to be looking at that, and they are calling the policy cruel and one that puts the migrants in danger. So what they're going to be probably getting back to is ending the the MPP ended the catch and release program, right?
Right.
And we are, looks like going back into that catch and release program, which is a disaster for America.
You know, let me say something.
Our borders are less secure, less safe, and the mission of our frontline personnel on the border is much more dangerous, thanks to President Biden.
And I'm glad I apologize for interrupting, because I wanted to mention this, but you just covered that. And here's something to support that. Already this year, at all of the border crossing areas, in checking with our Department of Homeland Security and our Border Protection and our Border Patrol, they are telling us unanimously all across the southern border that arrests are up now. Okay, they're up. Under the Trump administration, the arrests were down because the word got out. The border wall was being built. There was additional emphasis on security. And now, because of Biden, they're already jumping the border, okay? And arrests across the southern line are already up since the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Well, their goal is to streamline the naturalization process and get these people, you know, incorporated into our country. And I just don't think that that is the best thing for America. I think legal immigration, per the laws that we already have on the books, is the way to go. And to have an administration just flaunting what our laws already are, I don't understand how they can get away with that. And I think that the courts should not allow it. President Trump brought it back into more of a legal status along with our Constitution and the rules that are already in place by our Senate and Congress over the years. If they want to change this, this needs to go through the Senate and Congress and not executive order.
No, and you're exactly right. And Texas, God bless Texas, our Attorney General, Ken Paxton, and our Governor, Greg Abbott, both wonderful leaders, had filed suit against the United States government, and we managed to get a temporary restraining order with regards to Joe Biden's executive order affecting Texas, where, you know, he was going to stop all of the deportations.
Yeah, 100-day moratorium on deportations is what he wanted.
Right. And I guess we've got a TRO, a temporary restraining order, for about 15 days now, signed by our judge in Texas. Now, here's the problem with this no more deportations order. Nobody's been vetted. In other words, there's no classifications. So that means that you can't deport anybody. And in Texas, we have a great deal of convicted criminals from other countries that we're getting ready to deport. But Border Patrol, ICE, and the Department of Homeland Security, in following, if we were to follow that edict, that executive order in Texas, we couldn't get rid of all those criminals. So now at least we've got another 15 days to push them back across the different countries that they belong in. But I have to really spend, and we have to spend, a lot of attention on how the courts are going to rule after that TRO is over. So we got basically 15 days to figure out what the heck's going to happen.
Well, and again, there are laws in place in this country. So although I know that the courts don't always rule properly, the laws are there, and if they do rule properly according to the laws of this country, then they cannot let him have his way. It has to be changed legally through our Congress and Senate. So we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, Biden has proposed a sweeping immigration bill that includes a pathway to citizenship for millions of illegal immigrants, millions of them. I absolutely do not think that this is in the best interest of our country. And again, I would have to ask Americans, is this what you voted for?
Well, apparently it is. You know, I think the theme moving forward for people like us and other common sense conservatives is going to be, you know, your hatred for Trump just apparently took over. You know, your emotional capture and your hatred for Trump has put us in this position, and we're stuck with Biden, Harris, Obama, George Soros, Susan Rice, John Kerry, et al. Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Adam Schiff, oh my God, I could go on and on and on. We are going to be stuck with these idiots for another 4 years. I think as much as you hated Trump, I'm talking to our two or three liberal friends and followers out there. I think you're going to have buyer's remorse. And I think you are going to have to admit, once we start falling apart here, that maybe, you know, yeah, I know you hated Trump, but his policies weren't bad. They protected America and American jobs.
Well, they did. And again, you know, being in Texas and being kind of in the eye of the storm here, we just see it a little bit differently than maybe some of the country that is further away from the border. But you really have to see this on the border in order to understand what and who is coming over the border. You know, one of the things that we talked about quite a bit at the beginning of the Trump administration was the problem with drugs pouring over the border, with the problems of fentanyl and opioids, and with our people, our citizens getting addicted and dying in droves. And a lot of them up in the upper East Coast.
Oh, absolutely. Up in Vermont, up in New Hampshire, you know, way up in Maine. And of course, obviously, I mean, all around the United States, but some of those states way up in our northeastern part of the United States of America were really getting hit hard. But, you know, I also wanted to mention, and this is one of your favorite topics, Linda, about the child trafficking and the child exploitation that comes right up through, you know, our biggest trafficking corridor, I think is a good word for it, is up to 35.
Well, and if you really look at what President Trump did, by letting the children come in, but not letting the adults come in with them, he prevented a lot of that because a lot of those children were not with their real parents.
Correct.
And so now, you know, we're going to take our children, they're all our children, back to being trafficked. And, you know, again, it's something, and we've talked about this many times, it's something that people don't want to know about, don't think is a big problem, but it is a big problem, and it and people need to pay attention to it and understand what's happening. And that's why these policies are horrific for America.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you really raised a good point because, you know, if you're in Iowa, it maybe if you're in Colorado, you know, Wyoming, or maybe Massachusetts or Delaware or places like that, you don't normally see it the way we see it in Texas. Those people absolutely are in your states. They're being exploited in your states. The drug trafficking is ridiculous in your states. But they're in a, you know, when you can't speak English and you don't have very many job skills and you have a problem with assimilation, okay? And we saw this in the beginning, you know, of our country's formulation with different cultures, right? Italians, you have Little Italy's. Why do you have a little Germany? Why do you have a little Saigon? Why do you have that? Because when those immigrants come into the United States, they have problems assimilating. However, the other cultures have assimilated, but they're in these, it's not an underworld, but it's not a subculture, but it's in the gray area of society. And what I mean by that, it's the hidden area of society. You don't really see them. You know, they're the guys and gals that are working in the back of the restaurant. You know what I mean?
Sure.
They're not the servers up in front. They're the people in the fields. They're the people maybe doing your lawn, or, you know, they're the work in the hotels. You know what I'm saying?
They're
cleaning
also
up your rooms. They're making your beds. They're, you know, they're doing things like that.
They're also the gang members on your streets.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we have to be extremely careful in this country. This country is taking a turn that I'm really concerned about. But let's talk more about these things after we get our first cup of coffee.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health. sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Last night, when we went to the gym, we passed by the gas station, and I noticed that the prices were up significantly.
Well, I got gas the day before yesterday, and it was up 12 cents. And in Texas, when gas rises 12 cents, that's kind of a big deal.
It's a big deal. We haven't been over $2 for a while. It was over $2.
Yeah, we were down around 160. We've actually, this last year, God, we were down around 118, 117. Yeah, but don't forget, you know, during the summertime, the gas prices do rise across the United States because that's when they take the refineries, some of the refineries offline so they can, you know, work on them. And that's done during the summer.
I have news for you, Dr. Ron. It ain't summer.
No, I know that. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, there are normal times during the years that we anticipate when the gas prices are going up. And it usually, you know, summertime, again, the summer drive, people are vacationing, they're driving, the gas companies get it, and it's a supply and demand thing. But these gas prices right now that are rising across the United States, and I'm watching California in particular, these are an indication of a response. This is the response to Joe Biden closing down the permits for the Keystone Pipeline, the oil leases out in the Gulf and around the country, and also his executive orders that deal with fossil fuels. This is all a symbiotic relationship, and the energy and power industry is just beginning to reel from the effects of these executive orders.
Well, this is a really big deal for America in so many ways. So many states and jobs will be affected. Gosh, you take all the states that do refining of oil, you take the states that the pipeline goes through, you take the states like California, who has huge gas and oil facilities there. All of these jobs are going to be affected. All of the people, the real people, you know, the individual worker, their family is going to be affected. Their house payments are going to be affected because you can't walk out right now, especially during a time where so much is shut down in our country, and just get another job. You can't do that. And, you know, we talk about this whole big thing with unemployment. You know, well, the government's coming in and they're paying unemployment and, you know, you'll get money. Oh no, don't even think about that, because the amount of unemployment money you get is nowhere near what you were making. It is nowhere near to cover your bills. And they have a max on it that will probably be met within just a few months, and you'll be out of money completely. I mean, out of money, not a dime coming into your family. How would that work for people?
Well, you know, the people are so naive because they, you know, the whole adage, and Bernie Sanders is famous for this, and Ocasio-Cortez is famous for this, and I mean, Elizabeth Warren during the campaign, all these people are famous for this: tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. And the little guy that really is the bulwark of the United States of America, which is the little guy, the common worker, the blue collar worker, not the executives, not the white collar worker. Those people are not going to be affected. Absolutely, they are going to be affected. Linda, you just talked about the Keystone Pipeline and the severance of the oil leases on federal land. And, you know, the economic turmoil that this is causing, where people that were making a good income, I'm talking blue collar worker and laborers, welders, pipe fitters, truckers, people like this, all engaged with the Keystone Pipeline and also in our fossil fuel industry. They went from having a job yesterday to having no job today. Now that you don't have a job today, because of what happened with the executive orders, and now gas is going up, right? Who's going to be affected most by that? You and I both have jobs. We can afford to put gas in our car, and thank God we live in a state where we don't have excessive gas taxation. So, you know, we're still at, I think we're at a couple of bucks.
What? We're at 202.
Two oh two. All right. But think about that same person, not us, but think about the little guy, the American, the worker, the blue collar worker, the laborer that lives in California. And you tell me that by the end of the year, their gas prices are not going to rise up to $5 a gallon.
Yeah.
I think you're nuts if you don't think that.
They have so much.
How is that person going to afford that gas? And by the way, with what you just said, they are not going to get the kind of money that they thought they were going to get.
Well, I think that they have to have a wind powered or a solar powered vehicle. I think that that's the answer. I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
But, you know, listen, on the pipeline, this has already gone into litigation all over the country, and it should. And I hope that every single state affected, which is every state in some way, sues the federal government over this. So in South Dakota, they have had several lawsuits, and luckily a federal appeals court decided to not make the pipeline be shut down in South Dakota just yet. They did not allow it to continue being built, however, but they did not shut it down. So that's a case that's going to be continue to be litigated. But there are so many people affected by this. The states that the pipeline runs through is one piece of it. So a portion of the Keystone Pipeline is in Texas, Oklahoma, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, and Illinois. There's also things like these pumping stations that are in other states other than those states. So I know that Illinois does have some of the pumping stations. And so there are many, many thousands of Americans that are affected by this decision. And not only the workers, Ron, and we've talked about the people that surround the workers, the businesses
the
that
support system,
those
the infrastructure.
Workers,
right.
but also the tax money that's obtained is another thing. And the schools in those states depend on that tax money. So where is that going to come from? When we're in this huge discussion about schools regards to the pandemic right now and how they have to spend all these extra dollars in order to become safe for students to go back to school. Now you've just taken all of their money away.
Well, you know, I was just listening to a senator from the state of Wyoming, and she was talking about the fact that they get about $150 million in oil and gas tax revenues from the Keystone Pipeline, you know, normally, or from those types of revenues. And they take that money and they put that money into their public school system, and that's going to be gone. Next door in Montana, it's even more money. I think it's like $180 million up in Montana. And what I did not know, because I'm not a frequenter of those states, I've been to those states several times, but I don't live there. Apparently, a great percentage of the land in the states of Montana and Wyoming are federal lands.
Yes.
We are the opposite of
yes.
that. In Texas, I think 95% of our land in Texas is privately owned. So look how dependent. And by the way, both of those states, both Wyoming and Montana, are not heavily populated states. Texas is, I think, the second most populated state behind the state of California, right? So they have minimum opportunities for taxation and, you know, supporting their infrastructure, which is a great example, their public school systems.
Yeah, and I was actually reading, because we've talked about the size of the pipeline, and much of the pipeline is only, what from what I read, 30 inches. I thought it was a good deal more than that, but the footprint is only about 4 feet when all is said and done.
Well, it's a little bit bigger. But not much bigger. I get your point. Yes, the Keystone Pipeline footprint is much, much smaller than people would expect it to be. Like when you see the pipeline, you know, going through Alaska, right? And I've had some friends that worked on the pipeline up in Alaska. Because of the tundra and, you know, the ice underneath the surface, you can't, and the rocky, you know, a lot of it is rock.
Right.
Okay. You can't bury it. So you've got to carry it over the top. So you can visibly see the pipeline if you're up in Alaska,
yeah.
But you can't see the vast majority. And I mean, vast majority of the pipeline, of the Keystone Pipeline. What you see is you see substations. Every once in a while, you'll see, you know, a substation,
yeah.
and that will appear above the ground. But we've been through the pipeline many times and you can't even see it.
Right. You have to really look. But that pipeline is just, it's a lifeline for the oil to get, the crude oil to get from Canada all the way down to the Gulf. And the thing is that it carries so much oil, or the potential amount of oil that it carries is so much oil. Let's talk about what is going to have to be done when that pipeline is shut down to get that oil to its destination.
Yeah, you know, I would encourage our friends and followers, because there's a couple of figures that are out there about how many barrels of oil per day would go through the pipeline. I've seen over 800,000 barrels a day. You've seen something over 500,000.
Well, I've seen that it's somewhere between 541,000 and 1.1 million.
Okay.
So we're right in there with the numbers. But either way, just think about the volume of that crude oil, and think about now with the pipeline shut down, how is it going to get from point A to point B?
That's right. And here's how it's going to go. It's got to go by train, and everybody has seen oil cars on trains before. So it's going to have to go by train, and it's going to have to go by truck and train. How else is it going to go? You're not going to fly it. Okay. So when you're talking about, and this is a great subject that we're talking about, oil and energy and everything like that, and alternative energy sources and the Green New Deal, because believe me, it's all a symbiotic relationship. And when people say, well, we're going to shut down this Keystone Pipeline for environmental purposes because of the Green New Deal, okay, fine, but we are still getting oil, not only in the United States, because we're oil under Trump, we were oil and gas and energy independent.
Rather, rather than importing it, we were exporting
it. Exactly. But we have to depend still now, because of what has happened, we have to depend on our Canadian brothers and sisters to the north. And then we're going to have to look at other places. But, we're going to have to go back to our enemies in Venezuela, people that are really not our friends in Saudi Arabia. OPEC has been a very exploitive situation for the United States. But people need to think about, okay, now that Biden Harris have taken America out of being energy independent, what's the footprint, what they say, the carbon footprint that is created by the alternative means of importing and transporting oil into the United States and across the United States?
Well, the oil that would have come through the pipeline from Canada and also from Alaska, I'm sure, you know, once you get this down there, because President Trump had opened up Anwar. So 800,000 barrels a day. Just think about that. That's a staggering number. And now it's going to have to go by rail car, which is much more dangerous and polluting than the oil pipeline. And even worse than that, by
truck,
which is much more dangerous and polluting. And how many trucks? I don't even know the math to that. How many trucks?
Well, it's thousands, Linda. It's thousands.
A day.
It's thousands and scores, if not hundreds, of train trips throughout the United States in a single day. Just think about the pollution that is created by thousands of trucks and hundreds of diesel-powered locomotives.
And, you know, I think about the pollution, but I also think about the traffic on the roads. I think about the road usage that, you know, then we have to replace the roads. I think about the danger to citizens driving, because trucks do get in accidents, especially in bad weather. And we're talking about areas that have snow and bad weather. There's just so many repercussions to this one signature on this one piece of paper that President Biden did in his first day of office that damages America and America's independence and American citizens' lives.
Well, you know, Linda, and we're going to probably be redundant, you know, during our conversation tonight, but these are the consequences when you have policies that are signed overnight, literally signed overnight, and there's no study, there's no plan. It's just done to placate a political base. This one would be the environmentalists. And so now he just arbitrarily and without thinking, without a lot of planning, without a lot of study and research, look at what the consequences are of signing bills like this. But I want to stay on this whole thing about the Green New Deal and energy and environmental consequences. And I want to talk about what are our alternative sources of energy going to be. And you hear John Kerry talking about this. You hear the new cabinet member, the female, that's going to be in charge of Department of Energy or whatever. And then you hear Joe Biden talking about this and Kamala Harris. And that is, well, we're going to have, and Buttigieg was talking about this the other day. Well, they're just going to have jobs in solar and wind energy, solar powered energy. Okay, so who is almost the sole, but certainly the leading producer of solar panels in the world? Linda, who is it?
China.
Right. And don't forget, you know, we call Biden China Joe, and there's a reason why we call him China Joe. So now we take the country that we are in competition with, who is our absolute adversary and enemy throughout the world, communist China, and they are the number one producer of solar panels in the world. And they are fighting for us about the number one place in the economy in the world. And we just handed that to them.
Of course. And think about, you know, talk about damage to the environment. What do solar panels include? Silver. They include silver. So now silver is expected to go way up in price. So how much is a solar panel going to cost? And where do you get silver? You've got to dig in the earth to get silver.
You've got to mine it.
You've got to mine it. You've got to damage the earth to get it. So come on. I mean, nothing is this simple that you just sign a document on day one that affects so many people. You give control to our enemy and you damage the earth even further.
And I know you all have televisions and you watch commercials, so you have to start paying attention to Dr. Ron and Linda. Start looking at your commercials. I'm already seeing them. And you know, you get the metal commercials, buy gold, buy silver. What are the commercials that are on right now? Buy silver, buy silver, buy silver. Now you know why they want you to buy silver. So now we've done that and we've given that up to the communist Chinese. And to retool our industry to build solar panels so that the United States of America builds solar panels is going to take years. And we already had a solar panel manufacturing company under the Obama-Biden administration called Solyndra. I think it was in California.
Yeah.
And they gave it a couple of $1 billion.
Well, I think, a lot of money.
And it went bust. It went bust. So also, even if we start producing solar panels in the United States, some of the raw materials for the solar panels, where do you think you're going to find them, Linda? China.
China. Well, hey, I want to talk about crime coming up after this cup of coffee.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli, forensic criminologist, death investigator, and host of A Thread of Evidence on America Out Loud. Are you a fan of CSI shows and documentaries? Are you fascinated with how death investigators like me solve high-profile death cases like you see on the news? If so, then I encourage you to join me as I unpack some of the most high-profile police and civilian-involved death cases in my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police. Read all about the forensic evidence you never heard on the evening news. You can get a copy of my best-selling book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, today by ordering it on my forensic site at www.dronmartinelli.com. DrRonMartinelli.com. And remember, without truth, there is no justice.
Fighting every day against the internet monopolies that are trying to stifle our right to free speech and freedom of assembly. 5 years on the air, and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Article in the Wall Street Journal by Heather McDonald called Taking Stock of a Most Violent Year.
You know, Heather is a personal friend. We've both written books. Both of us are criminologists. We've both written books. Heather's written a couple of wonderful books. And of course, I have my Black Lives Matter book, but we both talk about crime. But Heather's recent column about the rise in crime, violent crime in the United States is absolutely staggering and a must read.
It is staggering. So what she points out is that the year 2020 saw the largest percentage increase in homicides in American history. Murder was up nearly 37% in a sample of 57 large and medium-sized cities. I mean, that's a huge amount. Based on preliminary estimates, at least 2,000 more Americans were murdered, and most of them were Black, in 2020 than in 2019.
And that's very consistent with regards to people of color being murdered at greater rates than white people. That's very, very true. And obviously a lot of these homicides take place in urban America, in the big urban cities, which are quite violent. Here's a great example of that. You know, you and I both follow the city of Chicago in their crime stats. And already this year, Chicago, in this past month, as a matter of fact, Chicago experienced 51 homicides.
Oh my gosh.
And it's the greatest increase in homicides in the city of Chicago in 4 years. And Chicago is absolutely one of America's top violent cities.
You know, what's most interesting about this article, besides some of the figures, which I do want to talk about, is that she points out that mainstream media and politicians are blaming the pandemic. And she says the chronology does not support that assertion. And now the criminal justice policies that are supported by Biden are going to exacerbate the problem. So I just want to talk about a few stats here. And I know that you probably have a lot of them, too. But let's take a city, Milwaukee, 95% increases in murder, 95% in Milwaukee, 78% in Louisville, Kentucky, 74% in Seattle, 72% in Minneapolis, 62% in New Orleans, and 58% in Atlanta.
No, and I will tell you, you know, as a criminologist and a researcher, Linda, anytime that you see statistics that are over 20% and over, that's something that's remarkable and people need to pay attention to. And according to Heather's statistics, and I agree because I look at the same statistics every single day, we are many times over that. You know, I saw in New York City, I saw that the gun violence statistics of increase over previous years is up several hundred percent. And that's absolutely incredible. And this is not pandemic related. It's behavioral related.
Well, and she would agree with that, I'm sure, as do I. The stats show that through May, actually, shootings were down. But then in May, they picked up and it started with drive-by shootings. So we have dozens of children that were shot in drive-by shootings this year. They were in their beds, living rooms, strollers. They were at barbecues, parties, malls, in their parents' cars. I mean, these are not pandemic related. 55 children were killed in Chicago in 2020, 17 in St. Louis, 11 in Philadelphia, and in South Los Angeles, 40 children were shot.
You know, here's the thing, and as a medical investigator, we are always dealing with two issues, Linda. We're dealing with COD, or cause of death, and MOD, or manner of death. And neither, what Heather is bringing out here, which is so important when she says that the chronology does not support what the, you know, mainstream media and the politicians are saying, neither the cause of death nor the manner of death is pandemic related.
It is not pandemic related. And you can look around the world and see that other countries, all of whom were affected by the pandemic, did not have this rise in homicides.
Well, one of the reasons, Linda, is that it's gun-related homicides, shootings, and murders. And Heather does a wonderful job about talking about what the causes are for this upsurge in violent crime.
Well, a lot of it she blames, and we've talked about this many times, on the kind of the movement, you know, after George Floyd was killed, and the movement to defund the police. And then the city started defunding the police, and they started shutting down units within police departments that are the units that go out and handle gun crime or take guns off the street. And so they closed these units, and this is what you get.
Well, you know, the George Floyd case, which is still pending, that was the new Michael Brown hands up, don't shoot case. That's the new thing. So when I wrote my book on the Black Lives Matter movement and the war on police, chapter two of my book was Michael Brown hands up, don't shoot, which was a complete false narrative. Everything that was said, there was never any hands up, don't shoot, but that created the emphasis of the Black Lives Matter movement growing in America with the four D's, which are,
distance, and
defund and dissolve law enforcement, and also disengage. So disassociate law enforcement from everybody else, distance them from the public, then defund them, and then dissolve them. And that's what Heather is talking about right now.
Well, and the riots that we had that were not taken care of, that were not condemned by Democratic leaders, that were allowed to go on, say, in Portland, Seattle, and in other cities, and there was a very weak response given, and police's hands were tied in regards to arresting people and keeping them in jail. And we even had people like our own Vice President, Kamala Harris, paying money to get people taken out of prison for those riots. Now, what happens with police is that they really made them much weaker and people attack them. Our police officers have been shot in the head, have been hit with projectiles, have been pepper sprayed, firebombed, assaulted in all kinds of different ways, and nothing is happening to the perpetrators.
Well, and again, in my Black Lives Matter book, I talk about the realities of officer-involved shootings, both officers shooting suspects and suspects shooting officers. And when I did that book, here's the false narrative. You know, people will talk about, and this is the whole George Floyd thing, Michael Brown thing, it's all one and the same, that police officers shoot and kill an inordinate number of people of color. And that is not the truth whatsoever. They shoot twice as many white people as they do people of color. But people of color shoot nine times more police officers than police officers shoot them. And that is a huge false narrative that continues through. And when we talk about defunding police and dissolving police units and entire police agencies, this is what's going on. And when the main, and I've heard so many reporters talk about this, and it's pure, as China Joe Biden would say, it's pure malarkey. So when they say that the crime rate is down, that's pure bunk. The crime rate is not down. What's going on with police officers, and Heather McDonald points this out, is that their morale is so bad. They are not afraid of the criminals on the street. They're afraid of doing proactive police work where they try to take the criminals off the street because they themselves are the people that get in trouble and they get disciplined and they get prosecuted and they get, you know, fired from their jobs. And so the police officer who was normally a very proactive, let's get the bad guys, that's why I got into this job, let's try to give back to my community, I care about it, it's a calling. Instead of looking at that, what they're doing now is saying, well, you know what, I could either respond to this and I could get in all sorts of trouble and take rocks and bottles and maybe get suspended, maybe get fired, maybe get prosecuted, or I could just keep driving and get a paycheck. And that, unfortunately, is what happens now. They are not investigating. They're not doing proactive work. And reported crime is down. It isn't that crime is down. It's reported crime is down because the public sees that and they say, well, hell, why even call the police? They're not going to do anything.
Sure. And as Heather McDonald says, officers believe they face a political and legal environment that's going to sacrifice them in the name of racial justice. So they don't want to, they have to make a decision on every call they make, Ron. They have to make a decision if they're going to, you know, take care of that criminal situation or if they're going to look the other way because they don't want to be prosecuted. We have done a terrible disservice, not just to police officers. I mean, that is just on its face wrong what we've done to police officers. We have done a terrible disservice to Americans.
And you know, we could go on and on and on. We could have a conversation about nothing but this. There's so much of it. Just the other day in New York City, 68 council candidates, people running for city council, signed a pledge to remove police officers, metal detectors, and security scanners from public schools. Are you kidding me? There is a huge move afoot that is working, and it's backed by Black Lives Matter to get rid of school resources officers across the nation. And we know why we had the school resource officer program in the beginning. This is all part of disassociate, disengage, defund, and dissolve law enforcement entities from their own community.
How does this work with shootings that we have had in school, and then the public is crying for more resource officers and more metal detectors and more ways to check that nobody's bringing weapons into school? And now you have 68 people saying that they're going to get rid of all of that, where in our cities right now, as we speak, gang members are carrying more guns than ever before because they have a slim chance of getting stopped at the time. You know, like before, when police were doing proactive police work, when we could stop and frisk, when we could do FI cards, when we could be talking to people, now we get accused of it being racism. So we can't stop anybody. We can't search anybody. We can't frisk anybody. And they are free to carry their guns. And therefore, you have children and people being shot because, oh, by the way, they don't all shoot straight. So, you know, innocent citizens being murdered.
When you hear that a child is shot and killed in their bed, that doesn't mean that somebody walked up to the child's bed and shot the child in the head. These are errant shootings. These are drive-bys. These are people being crazy on the street with guns and firing rounds all over the place, penetrating some thin, you know, wooden wall and killing a child in their sleep, or killing a child in the front yard, or killing a child on the porch or in the living room, or a child, you know, sitting in a car being shot and killed. That's not somebody walking up to the car, seeing the child and firing through the window and killing the child. These are errant rounds going off by violent people with firearms that the police have been handcuffed in doing proactive work against and taking them off the street.
And what really, really harms police officers and Americans is that during his campaign, President Biden said, without justification, that African Americans rightly feared that their loved ones could be killed by a cop every time they stepped outside. He promises to eliminate racial disparities in law enforcement, but there are vast racial disparities in the commission of crimes. So if more Black people commit crimes of violence and police try to arrest them, they are accused of being racist. And that is not, you have to look at the whole picture, not just part of the picture, and they don't look at the whole picture. So if you say that police officers cannot arrest an inordinate amount of people of color, even if people of color are committing inordinate amounts of crimes, how does that move America forward?
Well, you know, that's an excellent article. I mean, excellent comment that you're making. And it's actually a chapter out of my Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police book, where I do this, and Dr. Heather McDonald, who I greatly respect, she does something very similar in her books. Well, you should really look up Dr. McDonald's books and buy one or two of them, because they're amazing treatises on, criminal research. But this is what you get when you have the Black Lives Matter movement living in the White House. What I'm going to talk about right now is a theme that runs through everything that we have talked about tonight, through immigration, through the pipeline, through energy, and through crime. Those are the topics we talked about tonight. And the thing that really irks me to no end is that when you hear these weak politicians talking, and I hear it every single day and I can't stand it, they say we need to move on to do things on behalf of the American people, or this, we're doing this on behalf of the American people, we are doing that on behalf of the American people, I'm signing 40 some odd executive orders for the American people. They don't have any of our concerns at heart. This has nothing to do with what the American people want, because if you talk to anybody who is an American, they would be against these things.
Well, and these things certainly didn't help America. So again, I would ask Americans, is this what you wanted when you voted for Joe Biden? I mean, I can't even imagine, because there's nothing good that comes out of any of these things.
And if you're paying attention on social media, have you noticed how little we are hearing from the progressive left people and the trolls that follow us around on social media and are all making these comments? When we had the election between Biden and Trump, they were making all these comments. We need to do this, we need to do that. And where are they now on social media? You hear nothing but crickets.
Stay tuned and pay attention to stations like America Out Loud. Right now is an important time to get engaged and to know what the truth is. AmericaOutLoud.com. Go there and take a listen and take a look at the articles.
And we'll catch you again on the radio.